You'll be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Today is Thursday, July 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump again looks to stoke his base of supporters by attacking four minority congresswomen.
They're always telling us how to run it, how to do this, how to do that. You know what? If they don't love it, tell them to leave it.
Experts say the Trump administration is violating international law with its new asylum rules. Also ahead, Paul McCartney is writing a made-for-stage musical based on an American classic. It's all on today's International Edition. For the fourth straight day, President Donald Trump attacked four women of color in Congress, continuing to question their loyalty to the country and suggesting they should leave America. When Trump accused Ilhan Omar, a war refugee from Somalia, of anti-Semitic screeds, the crowd in Greenville, as you heard, Greenville, North Carolina, responded with chants of "send her back."
And tonight I have a suggestion for the hate-filled extremists who are constantly trying to tear our country down. They never have anything good to say. That's why I say, hey, if they don't like it, let them leave. Let them leave. Let them leave.
Giving an early preview of how he will attack his opponent in 2020, Trump declared that those who support Democrats next year would be voting for the rise of radical socialism and the destruction of the American dream, frankly, the destruction of the country, as he put it. During his 90-minute rally Wednesday, Trump several times thanked other Democrats in the House for voting down hours earlier in an attempt to push articles of impeachment against him. Several national polls show Trump trailing in a hypothetical matchup against several leading Democratic Party contenders vying for their party's nomination to face the president in next year's election. A major immigration policy shift took effect Tuesday in the United States to deny asylum to anyone who shows up on the Mexican border after traveling through another country. The dramatic move drew an immediate lawsuit from the American Civil Liberties Union, and some say it could violate international asylum law. Joining us to talk more about it is Kate Ogg, senior lecturer at the Australian National University School of Law. What happened here?
Any policy like the one Trump has introduced that denies refugees protection on the grounds that, well, they have been en route through what he may deem to be a safe third country is not permissible at all under the Refugee Convention. So there's nothing in the Refugee Convention which says a refugee must seek protection in the region or the first country they come across, which is safe. I mean, the Refugee Convention doesn't say that at all. But one of the most significant obligations, states' obligations under the Refugee Convention, is what's called non-refoulement. So a country like the US has ratified the protocol to the Refugee Convention, it cannot return someone to a place where there is a well-founded fear of persecution, you know, on certain grounds, such as the first race or their political opinion. So by just having this blanket policy, you know, for example, you have come from Haiti, you've gone through Mexico to get to the US, we are not entertaining your asylum claim. That puts the US in breach of its non-refoulement obligations under the Refugee Convention, perhaps also non-refoulement obligations under other conventions, such as the Convention Against Torture.
According to this new policy, they have to pass an initial screening for a credible fear interview. Under this new policy, most would probably fail the test unless they sought asylum in at least one transit country they were denied, but then they would be placed in fast-track deportation to their home country at the U.S. expense. So it sounds like that part of it, for sure, going back to where they came from, which they're saying is a danger. If this is in violation of these international laws, I'm wondering if there is really any enforcement involved, or is it more just, well, there's nothing we can do about it?
This is already being challenged in American courts, and there is already precedent. There's a 2003 U.S. appellate court decision which says a refugee is not required to seek protection, you know, in the first in a transit country in the region. And there's decisions from the High Court of Australia. There's a 2005 decision. There's a 2001 decision from the English High Court, a Canadian Federal Court decision of from 2000. So there's a lot of jurisprudence from the US and from other countries that says this is not permissible under the Refugee Convention. And courts from these countries on the topic of refugee law have a tradition of talking to each other, of citing each other's jurisprudence. There's also guidelines from the UNHCR back all the way back from 1992, which also confirms this position that, you know, denying a request for protection just because a refugee has transited through a number of different countries is not permissible. So, I mean, the US isn't the first country to try this policy. So, I mean, it is being challenged in the US courts, and I would be surprised if the challenge fails.
What about internationally in charge of...
Internationally is a little bit more challenging. So a lot of international conventions, like, for example, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, they have what's called a treaty body under them. So, you know, a person who feels that their rights under that convention are being violated can bring a complaint to that treaty body against the state. The Refugee Convention doesn't have a mechanism like that, probably because it was one of the earliest human rights conventions, so an early 1950s convention. So it just wasn't something, an idea that was around at the time. So that mechanism isn't available. One mechanism that is, in theory, available is for a state. So it would have to be a state. So it has to be a state such as Canada, the UK, Australia, to bring the US before the International Court of Justice to, you know, on the grounds that the US is in violation of its obligations under the Refugee Convention. So there's always been that option. So the Refugee Convention says that disputes between states on the convention can be brought to the International Court of Justice. That has never happened before. And I think it's highly unlikely that it would happen because, as you know, most states don't have very good track records of refugee protection. So it would be unlikely that a state would want to bring the US before the International Court of Justice. And also, it's just not in states' interest to do so. So unfortunately, on the international level, there are not many options at all. So I think this is going to be won and lost on the domestic level in the US.
You're pretty convinced that the Trump administration is not going to succeed in their efforts?
I don't think so. I mean, looking at there is already US jurisprudence on this. There is already a US decision saying that a refugee is not required to seek protection in the first country they come to or in the region. And because there is just so much jurisprudence, so court decisions on this topic, on this issue, from many different countries in the world. And courts, you know, even in the US, you know, they do look to other countries for guidance and they do look to the UNHCR for guidance. So if the challenge that has been brought against this policy fails, I will be very surprised.
All right, that's Kate Ogg, senior lecturer at the Australian National University School of Law. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. House kills an impeachment resolution against President Trump. The U.S. cuts Turkey out of an F-35 fighter jet program. Zimbabwe's foreign currency ban spurs the demand for cryptocurrency. And a U.S. heat wave is just warming up for a long and scorching weekend. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And on our VOA mobile app, this is International Edition. Tuesday, the United States announced sanctions on the Myanmar military commander-in-chief and other military leaders it said were responsible for extrajudicial killings of Rohingya Muslims, barring them from entry to the United States. This as hundreds of people demonstrated in Myanmar's largest city of Yangon Wednesday. My colleague Steve Miller earlier spoke to our VOA Burmese service chief, Thon Win Thon, and started by asking about these protests.
Basically, it is about constitutional amendment. So the current constitution is drafted and approved in 2008. So everybody in Burma, also international consensus is that constitution is very unfair and need a lot of amendments. Some even suggested to scrap the constitution. So yesterday, there was a kind of proposal to have the kind, a lot of points in to make amendment in the current constitutions. So one set of protests is actually to support the change or to amend the constitution. But there's another set of protests which is against, particularly about clause number 59 or something like that, which is make a kind of restrictions about presidential candidates.
Right, because right now Aung San Suu Kyi is prohibited to being the actual president of Myanmar, also known as Burma, and they want to change that, even though she's the de facto head of state.
Yeah, yeah, that's a particular constitutional clause barred her from taking the official office as a president because of her husband and her sons are foreign nationals.
Is there any indication as to why this is taking place now? Because as we've been discussing, the Constitution dates back to 2008. This is 2019.
Yeah, it's one of the campaign promises by the current National League for Democracy ruling party is to change the Constitution or to amend the Constitution. So, but the nature of the 2008 Constitution is very rigid. Very difficult to change, especially for the very important or controversial clauses.
Because the military maintains 25% control of the government and you need more than 75% to pass any constitutional amendments, what's next?
Yeah, it is a long process. You know, that for the moment, the Joint Committee for the Constitutional Amendment reported back to the parliament. They collected altogether 3,765 points to make as an amendment points. So proposal. I don't know I don't know how it will be discussed and how it will be approved. For example, even for the one clause, there's a different proposal from 14 political parties and individual. So some ethnic nationality groups want such change in their way. Some political party don't want it and they're different. So I don't know how they will accept the proposal or reject the proposal. So it is very, very vague anyway. So, of course, we will be watching this situation as a kind of movement which will be manipulated by the both sides before the 2020 elections.
All right, that is VOA Burmese Service Chief Thaw Nguyen Thaw speaking with International Edition's Steve Miller. The Congolese Health Ministry confirms that an Ebola case in Goma late Sunday, marking the first time the virus has reached the city of more than 2 million people along the border with Rwanda since the epidemic began nearly a year ago. The World Health Organization will convene an emergency committee Wednesday to assess the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo to determine whether it should be declared a public health emergency of international concern, or they did convene. I should say the decision will be announced. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The declaration of the Ebola outbreak as an international public health emergency elevates the disease and the efforts needed to combat it to a significantly higher level of concern. Nevertheless, Chair of the Committee Robert Steffen cautions against overreacting to the meaning of this decision.
This is still a regional emergency and by no way a global threat. And why this change of opinion? There is concern about spread of Ebola from Goma, a getaway, even though so far no cases were newly infected in this city.
On Sunday, the first case of Ebola was discovered in Goma, a city of 2 million people. The pastor infected with the virus has since died. Steffen says the recurrence of intense transmission in Beni, an earlier epicenter of the disease, and the recent murder of two Ebola health workers were among other factors that fed into the committee's decision. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges the risk of spread of the disease in the DRC remains very high, but he says the risk of spread outside the region remains low. Although the committee has declared Ebola to be a global health emergency, Tedros says WHO does not recommend any restrictions on travel or trade.
Which, rather than stopping Ebola, can actually hamper the fight. Closing borders could have disastrous consequences for the lives and livelihoods of the people who cross the border every day for trade, education, or to visit relatives.
Since the Ebola epidemic was declared nearly 1 year ago on August 1st, WHO reports there have been more than 2,500 cases, including nearly 1,670 deaths. This is the 10th outbreak of the disease over the last four decades in the DRC. It is the second largest outbreak after the 2014 historic epidemic in West Africa that killed more than 11,300 people. WHO warns insecurity due to conflict in North Kivu and Ituri provinces, as well as tepid international financial support, are main threats to stopping the Ebola virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you are listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues.
I have visual on their ship.
This is organized crime.
Mexico narco-traffickers call Totoaba the cocaine of the sea. The fishing of the Totoaba by Chinese traffickers and Mexican cartels is killing the vaquita. The vaquita is getting extinct.
A new National Geographic documentary called Sea of Shadows is now out in U.S. theaters, and it casts a spotlight on the little-known plight of the endangered vaquita, a species of porpoise that's become collateral damage in a poaching crisis in Mexico's Sea of Cortez. Mexican crime syndicates have partnered with the Chinese mafia in the illegal fishing of the native Totoaba, whose bladders are believed to have miraculous healing powers and can fetch prices upwards of $100,000 on the Chinese black market. The vaquitas are getting caught in fishing nets and suffocating. The film's executive producer is actor and environmentalist Leonardo DiCaprio, who takes us into the efforts of activists trying to save this species. I caught up with one of the activists we see in Sea of Shadows, veterinarian Dr. Cynthia Smith. In part one of this interview with her, I ask about how the film highlights these people putting their lives on the line to save the last remaining vaquitas and bring the international crime syndicate to justice.
Andrea Crosta, who runs Earth League International, is the undercover crime investigator who's really trying to root all of this out. And he is tracking the products, the Totoaba fish, that the illegal fishers are going after in the Sea of Cortez, which then ends up killing vaquitas. He's tracking that through Tijuana, through the hands of Mexicans to Chinese, and then either through the U.S. and then on to Hong Kong or China, or directly on to Hong Kong or China. So we have multiple countries involved. There's an appetite for this kind of thing that is just devastating the planet. There are multiple products that are trafficked in this way, and it is a major conservation challenge. So I think this movie provides insight into that and a wake-up call for people to realize that there is something that we need to be doing differently. We need to get involved in these wildlife crime issues and put more resources and more compassion behind trying to help solve these problems in a meaningful, long-lasting way, because otherwise it will continue to devastate so many species like the vaquita.
The vaquita, I understand, is actually a porpoise, a group of whales, and this is the only place it lives. What struck me the most, though, was the number decline. 1997, 567, and then it went down from there?
Yeah, and we're down to what we think are only 15 animals left. And how we got there, right now it's all about this illegal fishery, but prior to that, the animals were drowning in legal fishing nets, and the government of Mexico actually made gillnet fishing in their home range illegal. But the problem all along has been that these gillnets, which are really just death traps that get deployed into the waters, are killing everything. And so we have to come up with more sustainable ways. We are a smart people with a lot of resources at our fingertips. And if we can just focus that energy and those resources into developing alternative ways of fishing and doing it in a way that respects all of the creatures that share this planet with us, we'll be much better off and we'll have a shot at actually coming back from this really crisis situation that we're in.
How long has this project been going on to try to save the vaquitas?
Well, Vaquita CPR is a consortium of scientists and veterinarians and conservationists, and so I represent that group. And some of those key scientists, Lorenzo Rojas and Barb Taylor, to name two of our leading vaquita scientists, they've been studying these animals for decades. And so they have been instrumental in trying to make sure that people are aware of the issues surrounding the species. And then we're also instrumental in trying to make sure we were doing everything possible to prevent their extinction. So it isn't a new problem for the marine mammal community, but it's absolutely a new problem to the public. And many people have never heard of a vaquita. So we're just so grateful to the filmmaker and their teams for getting this out to the public and letting people know that we cannot solve it without everybody starting to get involved and helping us make these major changes in the way that we are meeting these wildlife crimes.
All right, that's veterinarian Dr. Cynthia Smith talking about the plight of the vaquita and the new National Geographic film Sea of Shadows that is highlighting those efforts. Stay tuned. We'll be back with part two after this.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Well, new National Geographic documentary Sea of Shadows, now in U.S. theaters, is casting a spotlight on the little-known plight of the endangered vaquita, a species of porpoise that's become collateral damage in a poaching crisis in Mexico's Sea of Cortez. Here is part two of my interview with veterinarian Dr. Cynthia Smith. My understanding is that there was an effort to create a sanctuary for them where you could
keep them safe.
And is that not going on now?
Yeah, there's something called ex situ conservation, and that simply means trying to protect animals, remove them from their natural habitat if that natural habitat has become toxic to them for whatever reason. And so we had determined that despite all of these people working so hard to make the Sea of Cortez safe for them, there were just too many nets in the water and the animals were continuing to drown. So we were attempting to buy them more time by putting them in a sanctuary environment and allowing everyone else to catch up to try to make their home safe for them again. And so the ultimate goal was, and it always is with ex situ conservation, to get the animals back into a healthy habitat. But sometimes you just need more time.
Was stressing them out too much to be moved?
That is what we think, yeah. So, you know, some animals can absolutely tolerate that kind of intervention and actually thrive, and you're able to build back and entire species by using that kind of tool. And what we learned, because there was so little known about Vaquita, we had to build the whole program based on what we know about other porpoises. So unfortunately, Vaquitas are just very unique. They, at least the ones that we encountered, were very stressed by being in the care of humans. And so it just, at least at this point, just does not look to be an option for them.
But looking at the numbers and how fast they have dwindled and how many there are left, if you're telling me there are 15 left,
yes.
What are the chances of this species surviving?
So even with that few number of animals, we have this great group of genetic scientists that have been working and studying vaquitas. They're based out of the Southwest Fisheries Science Center in San Diego, and they've been looking at, are we still okay from a genetic standpoint? And they have just recently completed that work to say, you know what, we still are. From a genetic standpoint, even with this small number of animals, if we can just get the threat eradicated and get those nets out of their waters, these animals can actually come back. Mm-hmm. And so you asked about hope and, you know, how do we hold on to that hope? It's not just the people, it's actually also all that data. If we can just make their home safe, these animals have a really good shot at coming back.
Do you know if there are still, of the 15, male, female, mm-hmm. breeding age, what are the capabilities of them to reproduce?
There's really good news in the midst of all of this tragedy. We recently went and did a photo ID study at the end of last year, and the animals are still reproducing. So we know there are viable females and viable males, and we've seen babies. So as part of that small group of animals, they are reproducing, and they look healthy. So until they encounter a net and drown, you know, these animals are fine. And so that adds to our hope that if we can just get rid of the gill nets and have them have a safe place to live, that these animals will be able to rebound. But it is that moment. We don't have any more time. And so we have to solve the issue right now or it will be too late.
Do you still have people out there patrolling?
Yeah, there are definitely people still out there. Jack Hutton with Sea Shepherd and his crew are still there, and they are pulling nets whenever they see them go in the water, and they're actively patrolling. Andrea Crosta and Earth League International are actively still rooting out the undercover crime, the wildlife criminals, and then our scientists are continuing to study the animals. Our Vaquita CPR team is continuing to understand the genetic components of the animals that are still on the planet, so we need support for all of those things.
All right, that is Dr. Cynthia Smith on the new Nat Geo documentary, Sea of Shadows, now in theaters. Well, Paul McCartney is writing his first stage musical, an adaptation of the classic movie It's a Wonderful Life. The ex-Beatle is collaborating with Billy Elliot, playwright Lee Hall, and West End producer Bill Kenwright, both from Broadway shows. McCartney said he's never considered writing a musical, but after meeting Kenwright and Hall 3 years ago, he found himself thinking it could be fun. Hall said McCartney's wit, emotional honesty, and melodic brilliance brings a whole new depth and breadth to the classic tale. Frank Capra's 1946 film tells the story of George Bailey, a small-town banker racked with regret, who was shown the value of his life by a guardian angel. Producers say they are aiming for a late 2020 launch for the show. Its dates and venue have not yet been released. Been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering African news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.